So I have some concerns.
Okay.
I saw a video on the internet of a small child singing the theme song to the Besties podcast.
Oh, and it has words?
No. Just like singing the melody to it. And then I guess at the end of the end of episodes, we say Besties, right?
So
she said that at the end. So I guess that is the one word. I'm worried that the show might not be as friendly as it could be to children.
Well, children like...
kids. I can handle this.
Oh, okay.
Okay, guys. Today we're going to be opening some Paw Patrol toys. This is my favorite. This is Rough Rider. Ruff is on the roll. This one over here is Barker. Oh, he's wrapped up in slime. This is what kids like.
Your kids watch a lot of ASMR.
No, my six-year-old does watch it. Okay, my six-year-old does watch ASMR videos, and when I hear them from across the room, I like literally am up on my feet, storming over like I don't know, I'm going to make her smoke an entire carton of ASMR videos. I will not have you descend into this madness.
Well, that's a very much a do as I say, not as I do situation, huh? I learned it from watching you, Dad.
Yeah, but I keep that secret from my children. Nice. Like a healthy parent.
Right.
Normal stuff. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
Uh-oh.
It's a loop. It's a loop!
It's a little raspy today. My name is Russ Rush, and I know the best game of the week.
Rev it up!
You gotta warm up your instrument, Russ.
Yeah, ba-ba-ba-ba.
Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. It's a video game club with four friends that want to talk about the best video games around. And it has been a pretty slow period in the game release. I think COVID is starting to catch up with some development cycles. So it's slow, and I think it'll continue to be a slow year. But that doesn't mean that games stop. In fact, there are little gems. What's that? Underneath this rock, it's a little gem. And this week's little gem that we want to talk about is called
Little Jim. And he's a little guy, and you gotta make Little Jim bounce around all the mushrooms.
It's Loop Hero is the name of the game.
Originally, we were going to do Valheim this week. That got punted down the road because I think Justin, Russ, and Chris wanted to play Loop Hero and not Valheim, which is cool because I played a lot of Valheim, and then they were like, "We're not playing Valheim," and I was like, "Oh, cool."
I just wasted that time on video games.
I know, but it's fine because now I've spent an unconscionable amount of time playing Loop Hero. Russ asked for everybody to show their time played, their play log on Steam, which would be folly for me because I've more or less just left it on.
Yeah.
And then I've been just sort of dipping in on the old like iPad from the couch, doing a little Steam Link remote play. It works. It's a perfect little game for that.
According to my Steam, I got on here to check my log. It says one friend playing, and it is Griffin McElroy.
Yeah, I do have it open right now.
Yeah, we may even want to close it out just for the recording.
I am in the middle of a pretty juicy loop, but I swear it's paused. It's paused. I would never do that.
Who wants to attempt Loop Hero?
I'm gonna give it a stab.
Okay.
Loop Hero is a roguelike where basically every run you're more or less starting from zero. You are this little RPG character that runs along a 2D loop of a road. And as you progress, you might run into enemies and different things on that road. But largely speaking, you have no control over what your little hero does. He'll run ahead or she'll run ahead and fight things, and you'll get experience and maybe items, but they are doing their own thing. The way you interact with the game is basically you place cards around the road that helps populate it. So imagine it like a strategy game where you're going to place a town, or you're going to place a graveyard, or you're going to place a spider cave, and those will determine what your character, as they loop around the world, encounters as they go around. That is like the core of the game. And then there's like a lot of meta stuff going on.
There's like 50 more sort of like RPG. It is an extremely RPG-y experience, because then you're also earning equipment during your loops that you are tossing on. And then you're also earning resources that you take back to a camp, which is sort of the main through line progression system, where you can build onto this camp to add a warehouse here or add an herbalist's hut to unlock things that will assist you in back in the loops.
Yeah, permanent upgrades that will make you better at doing loops. I've said this to a lot of people, and I think it's funny that we're doing a podcast, because there's no elevator pitch for this game that makes it sound fun or good. I don't know how you guys feel, but like, I really tried, and I do not think that there is a
I think I can get there.
Okay. I'm in the elevator. Boop.
For me, it is, and Justin will probably be able to speak to this a little bit more. I know he has
some experience about the sports.
Game. What?
We're in the elevator.
Oh, I see. I see. It's sort of the next step, I feel like, in what an idle game can be. It's one step of interactivity above what idle games are, I feel like.
It's the Breath of the Wild of idle games.
Of idle games, sure, yeah.
There we go. It's the Breath of the Wild of idle games. Boom. I mean, on the box.
It's the same issue that Auto Chess had, right? Like, both of you just did a terrible job pitching the game.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Yeah,
I can't do it either. It's the same, Auto Chess was this big phenomenon. And there is no good way to explain it without having people try it. I think there is still a demo available, for what it's worth. It's on Steam if people want to just like try it out at home. But it is a very hard game to summarize. And yet it does grab you pretty viciously.
Pretty much instantly. Yeah. Yeah. There's not that many sort of mechanics going on. It's just, I don't actually think idle game is a good definition for this game.
It's
because
very active.
If you are idle, you are going to not make it very long at all. Where the game really kind of takes off is understanding how all these different cards, which represent the tiles you can place on the map, like mountains or spider cocoons or rivers, or all of these have effects that occasionally will interact with one another. Mm-hmm. So for instance, there's a card called a grove. And when you put a grove on the map, every 2 days, it spawns a wolf enemy, which sounds bad, but you have to have enemies on the map in order to get better equipment and more cards to like more fully flesh your stuff out. Then there's an additional card called a blood grove that you can only place next to a grove on the map that will, any tile it's touching, if you get in a fight on that tile, it'll automatically kill whatever monster you're fighting once it gets down to 15% health. And that includes bosses, too. So you want to make sure you have a blood grove close to the camp tile, since that's where the bosses are. But if you put two blood groves together, it'll make a hungry grove, which will kill enemies at 20% health, but it'll also attack you sometimes.
That's
like,
bad.
I like a hungry grove, but that's the level of complexity that I feel like the game very, very quickly dives into, and it only branches out from there as you upgrade your camp and therefore unlock new cards with which to drop down on the map.
There's also a lot of fun risk reward type stuff. To touch on what Griffin said, it also doesn't tell you a lot of this stuff.
No,
this isn't like handholdy. Like, so I noticed that you can set down meadows that will heal you every loop. And then I noticed that some of my meadows were had flowers in them and were healing for more. And what you realize is that if you put a meadow next to another object, it becomes a blooming meadow, and that heals you for more. But this isn't like explicitly stated to you. So like, things happen and you don't exactly know why.
Yeah.
And that's part of the fun. The other thing is this fun risk reward of, there's a couple layers of it. One is, how many bad things am I going to put down to make my run profitable but not kill myself?
Yeah. Right.
Because if you put too much bad stuff down, or I got into this a lot early where I'm like, would put several bad things next to each other and they'd all decide to hang out together.
Yeah.
And so I'd wander a room full of like seven people ready to like take me to town. But there's also this question of, when do you bail on a run. Mm-hmm. If you get back to town, you can quit a run with 100% of the stuff that you found. If you die, you get 30% of the stuff that you found. If you
just run away at any other point,
stop mid-run, it's 60%.
Yeah.
So you do have to run some math in your head of like, I'm not going to make it around again. There's no way I'm going to get through.
I am terrible.
Bail right now.
I am terrible at making that call. I don't know about you guys, but I have made that call, the worst possible decision in that scenario, every single time. I'm like, nah, I can make it. And I never fucking do.
Russ, can I get in the pitch elevator really quickly?
Oh, yeah. Bing. Pitch elevator.
Oh, so it's a role-playing game where you play as the dungeon master.
Ooh.
Oh, interesting. Oh,
that's not bad.
I like that. Good work, Chris.
Thank you.
I like that.
It's so much of it is about balancing the game for a character that you have no control of. It's mixing pain and pleasure and then deciding when the game ends or else the character dies.
So we've talked about the broad strokes sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I genuinely do really like it, but I think that I really have a place in my life for a game like this right now. Like I said, having this on my iPad, like on my lap while I'm like watching TV, it is kind of perfect for that. Because you can sort of build a loop in a way where you can be a little bit more hands off, especially if you're going at like an earlier difficulty when you're a little bit stronger, because you want to try and eke out some resources here and there. Like, the game is very clever in how it kind of lets you go for different objectives with each loop. Like, most loops, there's a boss. Once you place enough cards, you spawn the boss of that act, right? So far, I've made it to act 3. I don't know what act you guys have made it to. But most of the time, like, I'm not going for that because maybe I don't know that I'm strong enough. I don't have enough upgrades to my camp to like even realistically achieve that. So sometimes I'll just, say, well, this loop, I really need to farm for some food resources because I need those to upgrade my, X, Y, or Z back at home. So what the game lets you do is it lets you go. There's a deck building aspect where you go into all of these tiles that you've unlocked and you can select which ones you're going to bring into your expedition. So maybe you bring in maybe you don't bring any groves and blood groves, and instead you just focus on meadows and things to make those meadows bloom, like Justin said, because that will get you more rations, which will, help you upgrade what you need to upgrade back home.
Yeah,
very cool angle for me.
Yeah, with that specifically, in addition to just like normal resources, like, oh, I need more wood or whatever, there are some like weird resources that you can only get in certain scenarios. One of them
is
the Orb of Expansion, I think it's called, where you have to fight at least 5 enemies in a single fight in order to have a chance to get one. I was like, well, I need this new upgrade. The only way to get it is Orb of Expansion. So I built a deck entirely about, I'm going to make it so I can survive fights with 5 or more people. And that makes those fights like super intense, but I can also like, oh, I'm going to put this tower down that does like AoE damage while I'm doing the fight and stuff like that. So it's kind of, it like each run you do can have a lot of different purposes, which I find like really interesting. And like, I was constantly like chasing different things, which was dope.
So that gets into my personal barrier to the game. I don't think this is a problem with the game. I think this is just a problem with me because I really enjoyed this game at the beginning. But the deeper I get into it, the more it feels like math homework. The goal of this game is for me to figure out the strategy guide for this game.
Sure.
And I need to undo all that puzzle. And then once I figure it out, I need to put it into like a 1970s supercomputer and let it slowly parse that equation by doing the loops over and over again. And this is a problem I have just with idle games in general, as much as I can like really let myself get lost in them. I don't feel good after I play them. And with this game, I have that same thing happening where I'll leave it on, like on the side while listening to a podcast. And I'll be like, well, I certainly made progress in this, but I never felt involved in it. And it doesn't help that I don't think the writing in this game is very good.
I think the writing's great. I think you're out of your mind.
I can't tell if it's intentional or not. The tutorial writing at the beginning where it's like, it starts on a sour note for me because it does that thing of like, well, that was stupid. Can you believe you had to do that stupid tutorials? Like that type of writing in games immediately turns me off. And then the rest of the game, I just can't tell. I would feel better if I knew for certain that the main character was just a total idiot and like that's the joke, or if this is supposed to be like actually Grimm and he's like Batman.
I think that it rides that line really well. I'm genuinely shocked to hear you say this because the game is all about basically like everything has been erased, not just like in a, you know, dark cloud style way where it's like, oh no, our towns are gone. It's like memories of everything are gone and are erased every time you defeat a boss and come back home and you're like, guys, I saved the day. Everybody's like, what the fuck are you talking about? So it's like a world where information has been obliterated and you are now like going on these loops to figure out why. And each boss kind of like reveals a little bit more about what is happening in this world. It is a pretty huge sort of like erasure style thing that is going on. And I think the way that they kind of talk about that is genuinely pretty radical.
A caveat to what I said, well, I don't know about radical, but the stuff when you're in the loop and you're talking to enemies, I enjoy that. And I especially enjoy just the design of the enemies. I think the art in this game is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's when I go back into the village, which is where I like want something that is like hooking me and pulling me into this world. And maybe that's just the nature of a story in which the world is like vacant and missing. And again, I am just struggling with like, what is the mood here? Is this like extremely dark and depressing, or is this all a goof, Undertale-y type of stuff, or what is it? Justin, do you have a thought of like where it lands for you?
For me, there's just too many gaps between stuff that feels substantive. Like, if you've played Isle games before, like, you know, like, we've been out here. Like, this is not like as revolutionary as a lot of people have sort of like framed it to be. I think it does a lot of things that are interesting, but a lot of the ideas are very idle game. I think that like, the problem for me, and I have a lot of problems because I put a lot of time in this game and I think that it's very interesting. I think it goes to what you're describing is that feeling of like badness that you get with an idle game is someone who's like, that is the feeling of like seeing an addiction cycle and like realizing like, I'm not necessarily having fun. What's happening is I'm just on like a next run, next run, next run, next run, incremental growth that serotonin hit. And I think that there's a way to have that part of a game where it's not like the entire, you know, Destiny is a good example, right? Where you're on the serotonin loop because it's like new gun, new gun, new gun, new gun. But the other half of that is fun fire, like genuinely shooting, fun skill-based encounters and shooting, right? I think Loop Hero is very close if it had a few more things that were genuinely fun and not just like mechanical and you know, power fantasy base. To give me, and there's a lot of stuff that feels like cruft and it's just not fun when you have to do it for the millionth time, like placing your meadows and your rocks and stuff like that is not a huge decision. You get a kind of an idea of what you want to do and then you do it, and having to take time to keep stopping to like, okay, let me drag those into there. And like, okay, let me drag these into there. Okay, I got new gear, so let me just drag the new gear in to swap out the good stuff for the bad stuff. Like, there's like decisions to be made in there, but they're very small and they're not in line with the amount of time it takes to do the boring stuff that doesn't matter at all.
I want to hop in here and say that I think even that little stuff evolves into more consequential decisions the further you get into the game. I've reached a point now in Act 3 where I've unlocked a tile called the River, and all that the River does is it doubles the effect of tiles that you place alongside the river. And like Justin was saying, like you have a lot of those basic resource cards like rocks, And there's like a desert card and there's a forest card. They have upgraded versions that you can also draw sometimes. And again, once you place enough tiles on the map, the boss spawns. So there's actually a question of, do I want to place this weaker version of the rock, or do I want to place down the mountain, which is twice as effective? Because if I put that rock down, I get a little bonus, but it's going to get me closer to that boss. So even those little decisions become more complex when you're like, well, do I want to just burn this card? Do I want to wait? And there's a tile called the Bookery that lets you exchange your cards. So maybe I hang on to those weak cards and trade them in for the strong cards. And then do I have a river I can put them down on to really maximize the effect? Like it really gets, there are no small decisions the further you get into the game, and that for me, that's the point I'm at, and it's where it's really got its hooks in me. Because if you do not take advantage of those things and you don't leverage those things, which again the game does not explain especially well, you're just not gonna succeed. You're just not gonna,
they just have to move that stuff faster.
I think it does, my point, because
it took me probably 6 hours to get through the first boss, to beat the first boss. And then, I don't know, do the math, 25 hours since then in Act 2. And I have yet to spawn the second
so
boss,
funny.
Right? It's just like, it feels like such a huge grind. And there's shit like, shame on me. This is my fault. But like, the next advance I needed to make in town was the, was wood. And I kept doing run after run after run and not getting wood. And then eventually I was like, wait a minute, there's gotta be something wrong here. And I needed to have the grove, which is like a forest basically, to get wood. And which like that makes sense. And once I made that connection, like I started thinking more critically about the stuff I was putting in my deck, depending on what I needed to get. But nothing in the game I had to like get on a polygon.com. Mm. To make that connection.
Yeah,
it's like, and I've already, you're welcome. I clicked on all the ads while I was there.
Oh, cool.
I got 50 pounds of boner pills coming to my house.
There is.
But like, it doesn't walk you through that. It doesn't help you with that. And like, it doesn't indicate to you. And it's just like, I spent 10 hours, like not really making progress because just, of it. It's kind of maddening.
Just to be for what it's worth. And I'm not saying that this is a justification of that, because you do need to unlock it. But there is an encyclopedia that you can unlock in the game that basically details every enemy you fight, every card,
everything.
Building, and tells you what you get.
That's beyond even where I am now. Like, I still haven't got an encyclopedia, and you need a lot of wood to get there,
Russ. I mean, it takes too long to get there.
It's a really cool mechanic, though, once you do get to it, because then you start collecting resources that are basically books of knowledge that you can spend at that intel center to unlock chapters of the encyclopedia to learn more about, like, the arcane interactions between, I'm still like finding new interactions that are like really wild. Like if you put there's a card called a Vampire Mansion that when you put it down on the map, it adds a vampire to any fights on the tiles that it's touching. And if that Vampire Mansion is touching the Bookery, which is like the library, you get a different kind of smart vampire who's like reading the book and says all kinds of wild shit about like the apocalypse that's going on right now.
That,
like,
that's the best.
Yeah, if you put one next to a village, have you done that?
Yeah. It destroys.
Yeah, if you get put one next to a village, it turns into a ransacked village that's just full of zombies and vampires. Which is great because there's always more than four of them. So it helps to get your orb of expansion, but also it turns into something valuable after a few loops.
Yeah.
So it's like, even that has a ramification.
Fresh, can I alley you?
Yeah.
So Fresh, can you get underneath get by the hoop? Cause I'm throwing it up.
What are we, soccer? This is soccer.
No, this is
classic alley oop stuff.
So, so classic alley oop. I was starting to kind of fade on it yesterday evening, and I had made it very, very far, resisting a thing that Mr. S. Rushik had told us to do very early, but being a real jerk, I refused to do, probably because you recommended it, which is unlocking the rogue.
Yeah.
And the rogue is very good.
Yeah, so there's three classes that are unlockable in the game. You start as a warrior, which is like a pretty typical like hit stuff with a shield and sword class. The second class you can unlock very early. It does not require very many resources, but is a rogue. I generally don't play as rogues in games. I don't like that play style. But in Loop Hero, it completely changes the structure of the game. Whereas before, you were like constantly getting loot as you walked around the loop. With the rogue, you collect trophies. And basically, these will turn into loot once you get to the end of the loop. or the campfire. So you'll end up with like 30 trophies, and then you hit the campfire and your entire inventory fills
jackpot
with like a ton of shit. And so what that does is completely make you re-envision, like, instead of, okay, throughout this entire loop, I'm constantly changing out my inventory and it's taking forever. Instead, I'm like, okay, what setup is going to make me survive this entire loop with no other resources?
Right.
So it really like reimagines it. It also, there's some fun stuff with like how their stats work. They're much more focused on dodging and damage than they are like regenning health. It like really does re-envision the game. I haven't unlocked the
third class is the necromancer, and it is tough. I cannot crack that.
It's really weird. The necromancer feels broken, not in a good way. Mm-hmm. Where the necromancer, the idea is that rather than you doing direct attacks, it's like the Russ, you played Monster Train, right?
Yeah.
Somebody here played Monster Train. Like the I think they call it the melting remnant. Is that the that where it's like more about sending out
lots of minions.
It's like a minion.
Basically,
like,
you're summoning Diablo skeletons and they're fighting for you, right? Yeah. And then the skeletons die, you summon more skeletons. And you don't have a weapon, you don't have a shield, you don't have armor. It's just about the magic that you bring in to make your skeletons more powerful. That's what I say feels broken. It feels like it needs a patch because like you get into a bad place with your skeletons where they're relatively weak. And if you find an enemy that's hitting hard, you could get up against an enemy that's just like one-shotting your skeleton as you're summoning it. And it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, but don't you just like
run, dead.
Don't you think you could build a deck that would basically prevent that from happening?
Not really. I mean, not with that level of specific. Yeah, that's the problem I've also had.
Because you run into a situation, because it's just a hard, it's like a math, it's like a scaling question, right? It's sort of like to what Plant was talking about. Like, it's not about like, well, if I just do this and this and this, it's like, oh no, I've hit an encounter that the scale of the damage that is being output beats the rate at which able to stay alive. And there's just no chance. I mean, it's just not going to happen. I'm
realizing.
Could I have made better decisions going into that? That would have made me better, all well-rounded. I mean, I don't know, probably. But
yeah, I think we should probably wrap up just because we
could get infinitely granular.
There are so many other little mechanics in this game. Well, I recommend. I'm curious what you all think for our listeners. Is like, I think you could get this game now and you would enjoy it.
Like, oh, for sure. I've been loving it.
I also think this is a game that, like, with maybe 5 to 6 months of updates, is going to be fantastic. I plan on revisiting this game hardcore before the end of the year, because I think it'll definitely be a piece of the Gotti conversation.
I do want to put one corollary on some of my complaints, and I would like to hear you guys discuss this. Like, I've been treating this very much as, like, a second browser window, like have it over here while I'm doing something else over here. And I think that I probably playing it wrong in that sense, where I should have more runs where I'm actually focused on the game. I've been taking much more of a like, I'll grind it out, see how the run goes. If I die, no big deal, I'll just start a new run. And I think that's part of why my progress has been so slow, because I haven't really been like paying attention and like focusing on individual runs. And I think I would probably be getting more out of it if I was and making progress a little bit faster if I was really
if it's an idle if it's an idle game. It is the most active idle game I've ever played by like a mile.
Right.
It requires constant supervision to the point of like you really like every few minutes every few seconds you really need to be making a call, and if you're not, you're probably fucking up in some way. So I agree. I don't think you can play it passively. I also, for what it's worth, on Plant's point of like waiting, I think this would be better if it was natively on something like an iPhone or a Switch or something like that, that you could pick up and put down. Right now, I don't think you can save in the middle of a loop, and loops can last like 30 minutes. Yeah. So it's kind of a commitment that you're making. You could just minimize it. The game's 40 megs. It's not going to kill your computer, but it's just,
but it is what encourages the way that Justin has played, I think. Having that, you're just like, well, whatever, I'll put it on in the background.
I think it will definitely hit some sort of mobile platform at some point in the future, especially given how insanely well it's done. But yeah, for the time, I mean, it's, you know, even if you have like a MacBook Air, I think it runs on Mac. And it's, again, 40 megs. It'll run on anything that you throw at it. So I think it's a good pickup.
Yep. Cool. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll get right back into all this great video game discussion and just basic friendship. Just good times.
Yeah.
Be right back. Okay. Russ, it says here, segment B, I love to sing. I have a passion for music.
Yeah. I want to be a famous, singer pop star.
I, Russ Freshdick, have to share my art, and this is my platform. Mm-hmm. My body is my instrument. Okay, that's a little graphic. Take it away.
Well, I wanted to do a special reader reviews edition of our singing reader reviews. So I thought we'd do a Zelda edition, given the fact that we just did that Zelda special where
okay.
I linked to the past one. So you guys, there's a few other reviews in here if you want to take one, but I'll do the first one. This is a review from Trifo3652.
Do we have to do Zelda music?
No.
Oh, it's the music from the Zelda franchise?
I'm going to, but you don't have to.
Okay. Let me think about some bops.
Great podcast. Always a joy to listen to these episodes. I've always picked up a number of games based on their recommendations, even if you don't play games, their chemistry and goofs are always a good listen.
Usually I can pick out what song it is that you're doing. And that time I definitely could not.
What song would you say that was, Russ?
I don't play it. What do you think?
I have no idea.
What was that, man?
It was a Snoopy song.
I thought you were doing a Zelda song.
Snoopy.
What? You told us you were going to do a Zelda song.
It says that. You just said it 30 seconds ago.
I'm going to do a Zelda song.
Snoopy.
You can't call an audible like that. You can't say I'm doing Zelda and then do Snoopy.
You especially can't say the words announce some Zelda shit and then do Snoopy.
Was the ending supposed to be that da 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 da?
Yeah.
Wow.
Why did you do it in a minor key? It sounded ominous.
I wouldn't have guessed it if you said here's some Snoopy shit. The best you at least give me that.
Curveball.
Right.
Griffin, do you have one?
I mean, I can try. I've started listening to this podcast during my commute to my miserable job, and it makes my day a little brighter. I laugh a lot and learn a ton. It's a wonderfully approachable show, and I enjoy all the episodes, even if I've never played the game. They're discussing, there's no gatekeeping, and the humor brings people in. Instead of cutting people out, it's one of my new favorites, and I will definitely be adding it to my regular rotation. And that was Doug from Zelda.
I knew it. Why did you say it?
Doug
from the Zelda games.
Let us guess. I would have got.
We should also mention the reviewer. That was Elizabeth Movius wrote that.
Yeah, thanks, Elizabeth. I just feel like I was really spinning my wheels. Like, what's the Gerudo Fortress music sound like, and how can I turn that into music? And Russ fucking ruined it.
I hopped on for the best Zelda episodes, and even though my respect for 3/4 of the podcast Donald Wynn, I learned they think BOTW doesn't look good. I still think this is good and great podcast. That was from Zelda.
That was a good one from Zelda.
That's the link to the past theme from Zelda, which doesn't get enough credit for being better than the theme to original.
I didn't recognize it
real quick. Hey, let's just.
No, he did the rupee. He did the rupee sound.
Can you sing along with this?
I mean, that's great. You can't beat that.
Now
come
I remember.
On.
Anybody been playing anything else that's good?
Oh, let me hop in. I'm sliding in. First off, I've been playing Solitaire Cube, which is Did you know, have you guys heard of skills?
Yeah.
I've been interested in it. You guys heard of skills? Not skills like you, we all have. Skills with a Z?
Oh, no.
It is, I was very interested in this because I thought it was interesting. It is a service where you basically like bet on your game of solitaire that you're going to have, like very small stakes, right? Like a quarter. And then the winner gets twice as much. Like you get the money for winning the thing.
What?
Right. Yeah, right? It's weird that this exists. I didn't quite believe it, but nope, there it is. You can play Tetris against people or solitaire or whatever, and you just get the money if you beat them.
That sounds...
Basically, like, for example, like there's like a dollar game, right, where each person bids in 60 cents, and then the winner gets a dollar. That's it.
Oh, and then the cut site gets the remainder?
Yeah, there you go. And it's the weird thing is it's being built in, like, skills as a platform is being built into mobile games. And which is interesting because it's weird, but also is interesting because it's like part of it becomes discoverability. So like if you integrate this into your platform, then skills can direct people towards your game and help to like, this is a thing you could do to set your game apart from the rest of the crowd, as far as that goes. But I was interested in it because it sounds like wild that
exists. Seems like it would be something that you could easily abuse with some sort of hacking something.
I think if I was doing this, that would be the first thing I'd figure out, Russ. But I'm sure well, if you want to black hat it, you could break through the ice.
I mean, somehow Bungie has not cracked that mystery in terms of making their game hack free. So.
But it's interesting. I just thought it was an interesting thing. I'm not endorsing you go out and play fucking 4-cash solitaire, even though it does make solitaire more interesting if you got 25 cents on the line to get somebody's uncle from Paducah. But listen, here's the other thing that I actually did want to highlight. It's called Not For Broadcast. Anybody else play this?
No.
Oh my God.
I wanted to play this.
Good.
Yeah.
Not For Broadcast. And I know that I get it. It's on Steam. And basically the game of Not For Broadcast is you are a television news producer that has a live feed of four different cameras. And you're producing a live news broadcast, everything from like basic stuff like cutting between different camera shots to loading up the ads to queuing the ads when it's time to play them to choosing which images you're going to use for like a certain story to accompany it. And censoring, there's a huge like censor button to take out like bad language, all FMV. Four different shots, and you'll run into situations like there are these protesters that are streaking through this sports competition, and you have to like choose your shots so you're not getting the naked people in your shots, or else you start losing viewers, which it absolutely
would not be
unintelligible. It would not be the case. Yeah. That's all freaking great, fantastic. What is actually a cool other layer on top of that is that. There is a sort of like anti-authoritarian storyline sort of layered over it where there is a new government party that has come into power and you are making choices in your broadcast, not just on what makes the best TV, but how much you're going to push against this.
Interesting.
So you've got people calling you like, make sure you run this ad for them in the second ad spot. You know, they're really, and then there's like outside of the news broadcast parts, there's like story segments where you're making choice, just text-based where you're making choices and seeing how the story develops for your personal life. And the choices you make during the broadcast affect that.
So kind of a papers, please your personal story. Vibe. It sounds
that. Like. Yeah. That kind of ish. Not quite that. Like it's more in the background. The producing the news segments are actually the best. And the news segments are they're really genuinely pretty funny. Choosing between the two of them is exciting. And you really do get to like a cook serve delicious kind of point where it's like, okay, I got to bleep his curse word, and now I got to switch the camera over because that person isn't talking. And also, if you linger on a certain shot for more than 10 seconds, you start losing viewers because they want to be entertained. So you got to switch to a different edit, and you got to play the music, and then, you know, you're fading in and out stuff and cueing the ads. And it's really cool. And they just released the second big chunk of it. They call it the second episode. But it's very cool. It's called Not for Broadcast.
That sounds very cool. I did want to, before we forget, Case Dearly wrote the review that Justin sang, and I don't think we called out Case Dearly. So props to you, Case Dearly. Someone else?
Yeah, I can do it real quick. I was sort of interested in picking up Breath of the Wild again, just to sort of kill some time before Monster Hunter gets here. Although I'll have a newborn baby when Monster Hunter gets here, so I'm going to be late to that particular
A different
party.
Form of Monster Hunter.
Right. But it is rare that I can get Henry, my son, who's 4 years old, interested in a game. He's a real jock, and he bullies me all the time. but I find that I have the most success with games like Breath of the Wild, and I don't know why I hadn't thought of like showing it to him, where you can just kind of do wild shit.
Yeah.
And he is very into that. Like the first time we saw a robot, Chris has said Meconium Hunter. Thank you. I don't know why you didn't want to say that out loud. Yeah. You got
to
be brave.
He didn't want it to be somebody's text message alert.
The first time we came across one of the little ancient robot enemies, like the smaller ones, and I had just gotten the magnet powers, which he had just had me lift shit up and throw it around for a while. And he's like, drop a box on him. So I did, and the thing exploded, and I saw that look on his face of just like, hey, this thing that I thought of that was kind of stupid worked and like achieved the thing, which was so amazing to me on so many levels, because it's the thing that I love about Breath of the Wild, but also the thing I love about games sometimes. Mm. And to see that really click with him was genuinely a very, very nice moment. And yeah. I also think it's been just long enough since my last playthrough of that game. I probably haven't played it since 2018. There's a lot of stuff that I'm coming at. Sort of, it seems very fresh to me. So I'm loving it.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I had a typing game featuring the Berenstain Bears, and at one point you could fill in the blank for what you wanted Papa Bear to do, and one of the, you know, we would basically have him jump off the roof of the barn. And that right. blew my mind. So I feel like this is the new generation of that.
Of the Berenstain Bears text-based adventure game. Yeah, I agree. And I think I remember seeing a lot of reviews to that effect when Breath of the Wild first came out. This obviously is derivative of the Berenstain Bears text-based adventure game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fresh, what else have you been playing besides Berenstain Bears?
I've been playing some Game Pass stuff. Obviously, people probably know that all of like a ton of Bethesda games got added to Game Pass this week as part of Bethesda getting bought by Microsoft. And so one of them was Morrowind, which is a Elder Scrolls game that I never played.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, wow. I never played it. And Morrowind came out in 2002, and it was, you know, I was sort of bracing myself for something that was just going to be like, you know, a 3D game from 2002 is going to look fucking heinous.
It does.
It starts out and you're in first person and it's fine. And like, yeah, you know, the character models look a little goofy, but it's very sharp because the Xbox like does all this like upscaling stuff. So it looks not bad. And then I switched into third person and my monstrosity of a cat man was just like lumbering across the fields looking like a total like disaster that shouldn't exist. So maybe hasn't aged the best. I think you're probably better off sticking with like the Skyrim re-release that they put on there as well. But that's been very good. I've also been playing Minecraft Dungeons, which is a game I sort of wrote off when it first came out. That's a pretty damn fun Diablo-like game. I'd highly recommend it, especially if you're looking for something fun to play with kids in multiplayer. It's very pick up and play. There's a lot of like fun physics stuff where like the enemies go flying through the screen and there's like some light RPG customization stuff. And it's free on Game Pass. So if you have Game Pass, definitely.
Did you see what else came out on Game Pass PC?
No.
No.
A little game called Nier Automata. Oh. I'm not sure if you saw that came out. Yep.
Oh, that's a good game.
Hey, here is the thing I've been playing that I recommend for everybody and I wish I had played more last year. It's called Cloud Gardens. Did any of you play this game?
Some of us haven't even heard of it.
Cloud Gardens is delightful. It has kind of like a PS1 style 3D aesthetic, and it's a puzzle game. What?
Justin only likes fresh, top of the line.
I thought I was muted.
It needs to be 4K.
It's a puzzle game, but also kind of like maintaining a bonsai tree sort of thing. It's more about relaxing, and it's just these like little 3D puzzles of, I don't know, I assume an abandoned world. Like imagine low-res Last of Us 2 biomes, and then you throw seeds on them, and then you add trash, and the seeds sprout, and they grow vines around that trash. And your goal is to cover the entire environment in foliage, like deciding where you place the plants and where you place the trash. And it is so, so delightful and pretty and nice.
What platform is that on?
It's on PC. I might be on other things, but that's where I'm playing it. And I strongly recommend it.
I have a PC. I have computers. Mm. I love computers.
Cool. What's your favorite part of computers, great. Griffin?
Well, you can talk to them, can't you? You can have like a, sometimes when I have a lonely feeling, I'll open up the like Microsoft Sam and I'll be like, how are you today, Sam? And I can type in like, good, Griffin, I'm your friend forever and I'll never leave you. Have you done that? It makes the lonely feelings not so lonely. And I like that about computers.
Sam's
your
friend.
What are we doing next week?
MacBook doesn't have a Sam, so I can't be friends with that, can I?
That's true.
That's why I'm a PC
next
for life.
Next week, we got
me and
it
Justin Long. Hold on. Me and Justin Long are also best friends because he is also a computer.
Next week, we got It Takes Two. It's a mini episode with just two of them.
Yeah. Chris and I are going to be playing It Takes Two, which is a game about a couple getting a divorce. So we thought we'd play that together. It's like a multiplayer centric game
shit.
From the creators of A Way Out. And
I can't wait to hear this one.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to that.
But it's also a comedy.
a fun divorce comedy. Like This Is Us.
Well, more of a Mrs. Doubt
with Meg Ryan and Bruce Willis. For crying out loud. Directed by Rob Reiner. They don't get divorced in the end.
It'll be okay.
It's funny. They get back together. So this has been Besties. Please subscribe to the show. Against all odds, please subscribe to this show. We think we've got a lot more great games in the future. We bet. Down a little bit in the future, but we'll be here every week talking about these gems. Listen, you're looking for the new games to come out. We're here. We're gonna help find the gems for you. We're renaming the show to Gem Hunters International. So please rate and review, subscribe to the show on your platform of choice. If you want to keep up with the show, at the Besties Pod, it's a great way to do it. So thanks for that, for all of it. For you, for being here. We appreciate it.
Really hit the bottom of the tank.
Tune in for Russ and Chris getting a divorce next week. That's it for the Besties. Be sure to join us again next time for the Besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games? Besties!